This week we read Parshas Hazinu. I was looking at last year's records, so we sometimes have the license under proper circumstances to adjust if we hadn't done all the aliyahs in previous years. So looking at last year, I see we've only done Rishon so far of Hazinu. So taking license to do Sheni and Shlishi today. Both of them are relatively short, but there are some major points that are particularly relevant to our limud in the sugyas of Hanukkah. So especially if you start off the beginning of Sheni, that's an opportunity to focus on that. So to begin with, the pasuk in the beginning of Sheni, Ha'azinu, tells us, Zechor Yemos Olam, Binu Shnos Dor Vador. And that is the obligation, essentially, to study Jewish history, to consider the facts that have happened so far to the Jewish people. First, to remember what has happened, and then Binu, to reflect and to build an understanding on the passing of the generations, the years of the generations, Shnos, the lashon of years, but also the changes that have happened over the course of generations, over the course of the years. The lashon of Bina, now this I have a personal connection to in terms of, you know, I've titled Svarim Bina B'Svarim Davka because of the connotation that Bina means Lahavin Davar Mitoch Davar. It means that you take a matter together with another matter and you understand how they influence each other. So that's the theme here as well, that one should realize that Jewish history is not any one moment in time, but is a process that's taken a very long time, and that you have to look at the long arc of history in order to understand it all. In order to have any type of a picture, it requires a bina of looking at all the parts at once. Rav Simcha Zissel Broyd in the Sefer Son Derech has a discussion about this, about how we can't understand any part of it just in a snapshot sense, but it has to be seen in the long picture. And he quotes from Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein, who's one of the earlier Rashi Yeshivas of the classic Chevron Yeshiva, who would make reference to the point that if you look at history in a specific sense, so you'd see that in 1492, the Spanish government exiled the Jews, and you'd think, okay, so then you'd expect this terrible action and all of the terrible treatment throughout the Inquisition, you'd think that they would be punished. You'd think that Kadosh Baruch Hu would deal with them for all the terrible things that they did to the Jewish people. And what happens in 1492? They discover America, right? Not just in the colloquial sense, they literally discover America. So it doesn't seem like such a payback, doesn't seem like such a punishment for what the Spanish had done. And it seems like they're really getting very richly rewarded during that time for all their treatment. But then you flash forward few centuries, and the discovery of America, the existence of America, becomes the haven for Jews fleeing Europe. And so many Jewish lives are saved by America existing, those who are davka being sent out or running away from Europe. So if you look at any moment in history by itself, look at 1492, it's so strange. Why are the Spanish people who are expelling the Jews being rewarded with the discovery of America? And it's that same discovery of America which century later ends up being all that's really left of the Spanish Empire, and ends up being that which is there to save the Jews. So he would hold this up as an example of what this means. Binu Shinoz Dor Vador, if we look at the generations in the long run, have a very different picture. Hi, Ian?
But even if, like, we weren't able to figure a reason, like, we would be able to say, like, oh, why aren't they punished? Maybe we shouldn't understand it.
Right, so the truth is, the whole endeavor of trying to understand anything in the short run, or, you know, even in the relatively long run, is itself a challenging game. It's not meant to suggest that, you know, it's the kind of thing that we have too much access to begin with. But sometimes we can see especially how little we understand if we focused on the short run. That we can see that if we would look at the picture by itself, we clearly would have missed a major element. So it's there not really so much, as you're correctly pointing out, it's there not really so much to tell us how we could understand things, but how much we couldn't understand. That how do we try to assess what happened? Oh, how could they end up being rewarded with discovering America? So we see that if we had a longer view, we would have had a different perspective on that. Which, by the way, I think is an important point when we talk about anything. You know, sometimes, an important idea to understand that sometimes we're very, very disturbed and we're very challenged because we have a kasha, you know, because we have a question. And we can't understand it, we don't know the answer. I can't think of any other good answer, so therefore, It's got to be, there is no answer, it's got to be the only answer I could think of, and that's a very big challenge to my emunah, for whatever the situation is. And it's important to realize, as the expression goes, the shaila where this expression first came from, but the expression, shari terutzim lo ninalu, that there are more answers than we can perceive of at any given moment. But also, we know from our own lives, and I think this is just a very useful thing to think about, that when we're children, looking back now when we were children, we know that there are things that we understand now that we couldn't understand then. And then we get a little bit older and we know there are things we understand then that we couldn't understand 2, 5, 10 years before. So we see just in the very short span of our own lives how our frame of reference can change radically and how there are things we couldn't conceive of at an earlier stage in our lives. And then we get a little bit older and all of a sudden it's possible to understand. All of a sudden we have different possibilities that we didn't have before. So that's an important tool to use sometimes when we're very troubled by the kind of situation where, well, I can't think of any other answer, so therefore it's got to be such and such. But then we recognize that the range of what we can think of, just even looking at the very short perspective of our own lives and our own cognitive development, can change so radically. It helps to keep things in perspective and to just to figure out how much you can derive from the fact that you can't think of any other answer right now, or that you can't think of any other possibility. So it's a similar type of issue. That so too, if you look at history in the long picture, there are things you can see that you couldn't see looking at it in the short picture. So that's not there to show you how much you can see, but how much you couldn't see, how much you can see now that you couldn't see before. So who knows how much more there is that you couldn't see before. And it's an important perspective to keep in mind, both in terms of your own life and in terms of historical issues and perspective as such. So now the pasuk goes on to say something which is very, very relevant to our Hanukkah sugya. I don't know if anybody had a chance to look at it. I think I said the message of Jonathan to look at the Gemara and Shabbos and Daf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, where there is a machlokas where the Gemara quotes a pasuk from the Aliyah, quotes this pasuk rather, that the question is, we know that we recite a bracha on Neiros Hanukkah, and that is held up really in our Gemara as an example of a din d'rabbanan we make a bracha on. In general, we make brachos on dinim d'rabbanan, sometimes minhagim also, that was a machlokas rishonim, but we make a bracha on dinim d'rabbanan for sure. And for some reason, that maybe we'll talk about later, the Gemara highlights Neiros Hanukkah as an example of an area to ask about this. Because the language, we say, asher kedushana b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu v'hadlik ner shel Hanukkah, prompts the question that the Gemara asks, Eichon tzivanu? You could open up the whole Chumash. Where do you find anywhere that God commanded you to light Neiros Hanukkah? There's an interesting parallel to this in a little bit of a different sense that we talked about yesterday about the mitzvah of shofar, and we mentioned that technically women are exempt. It's mitzvah seisha as man grama, but that women generally volunteer to take on this mitzvah. And the position of the Ashkenazi Rishonim, Rabbeinu Tam and the others, against the Sephardi tradition, but the Ashkenazi tradition is that not only can women volunteer to do a mitzvah saseh shahazman grama that they're exempt from, but they could also recite a bracha on it. And so therefore, they're invoking the language of asher kedushana b'mitzvosa b'tzivanu to do whatever it is, even though they're not technically obligated. So the Sephardi Rishonim did not think that was a valid approach to take. But the Ashkenazi approach is that yes, even though they're not actually obligated, it's valid for them to say these words, b'shem ha'malchus, that they're obligated in mitzvah shofar, mitzvah sukkah, lulav, etc., etc. So there you have somebody who's not obligated in a specific mitzvah that others are. The bracha exists under the understanding that there are some people who are obligated in this mitzvah, and people who are not obligated are allowed to invoke that bracha despite their personal voluntary nature. Here, this is something different. Here, the Gemara is saying that nobody seems to be directed by the Torah specifically to light Hanukkah candles. So how is it that we can recite such a bracha? How is it that such a bracha could exist? Asher kishana mitzvosa v'tzivanu v'hadlik ner shel Hanukkah. Jonathan?
I don't know if this is nitpicking a little bit. When we say that women have the ability to say this bracha, do we say that they're sort of accepting upon themselves that they have such a mitzvah, or they just have a stam minhag just to say these words?
Well, the question, even if it's a minig, the fact is there's no way that they are a mitzvah in the mitzvah.
Right.
So apparently we see that the nature, and that's a good question to ask in general if we ever go to the sugya of mitzvah saseh shazman grama, we will get up to the sugya of nashim and Neiros Hanukkah. It's a little bit of a different type of issue. But the general question of when we find the language of pater in the Gemara, So it's a big sugya, which is a little bit out of our scope today, that patur means a lot of different things in different contexts. Osik mitzvah patur, but a mitzvah means one thing. Mitzvah seisha as man grama, nashim paturim means something else. Stara patur and asuka means something else. Patur in every usage has different applications. So sometimes it means the mitzvah is completely not shaykh to you. Sometimes it means the mitzvah doesn't exist. Sometimes it means the mitzvah is there, but you're not technically required to do it. So it seems when we talk about women that there's a machlokas, I guess, in terms of the Ashkenazi Rishonim and the Sfardi Rishonim as to how to perceive it. But the practice to recite a bracha seems to be saying that even though they're not mechuyeves, they're not obligated to do shofar, lulav, etc., should they choose to do so, it enters into the category of a mitzvah where this language is appropriate, where you could say, Asher Kishonim Tzav Tzivanu, that it doesn't literally mean they obligated us to do it, but it means that the mitzvah was commanded, and when we partake of it, it becomes a mitzvah act. And it's similar, but slightly different, to this question that Gemara is asking here, that where do I open up my chumash? I don't see anywhere in chumash where the Torah told me to light Neris Hanukkah. So where did I get such a phrasing from to say Asher Kadosh Shvarim Mitzvosov and Sivanu? So the Gemara over there in our Perek has two answers. One answer is the pasuk we read Parsha Shoftim a few weeks ago. Normally we have the opportunity to have a Parsha Shir, Parsha Shoftim this year because everything starts, your whole calendar is pushed up so early. A lot of major, very dense Parshios that we didn't get to discuss in Parsha Shir because the year started already after even Kisavu. So we miss Rei, Shoftim, Kisavu, we miss some pretty big Parshios. So in Shoftim, so you read Lo Sasim and Adavra, Shiyagidu L'Chayam and Esmo, we're not supposed to deviate from that which the rabbinic authority at that time tells us. So the Gemara has Machlokas, Revivia, and Rebbechemia, that according to one opinion, that's the source, Heichan Sivanu, Lo Sasir, and according to the other opinion, the source is this pasuk that we're looking at now, Sha'al Avicha V'Yageidcha Zekeinecha V'Yomru Lach, that you should ask your elders, and they will tell you. Apparently, elders in this usage has a connotation of the Talmidei Chachamim, of the Rabbanan. Ask them, and they'll tell you, implies that you should follow what they tell you to do. So it's interesting, first of all, the idea of it being one pasuk or the other, and the idea of it being any pasuk. It was a major machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban as to what the source of rabbinic authority is, and this Gemara seems to be extremely relevant. The idea essentially is that the Rambam cites the pasuk in Parsha Shoftim of Lo Sasser, and the Torah says, Ki Palei Mimcha Davar, that it'll happen, that you're not going to know how to follow a din in Chumash, so you should go and ask the rabbinic authority. You should do what they tell you. You shouldn't deviate from that which they say. So the Ramban takes issue with this. And it seems like the Rambam has at least one opinion in the Gemara, or the Rambam has another Gemara in Brachas and Daf Yutes, where the Gemara there also connects Dinim Darabanan to the Pasuk of Lo Sasser. So what the Ramban really seems to take issue with is that the Ramban understands that this is all an asmachta, that really it's very difficult to say that the Torah is commanding dinim d'rabbanan from this pasuk for a lot of technical reasons. How is it that we're able to be makil by dinim d'rabbanan? Why is it we have suffik d'rabbanan l'kula, etc., if it all comes from this pasuk of Lo Sasser? So the Ramban understands that really they're all asmachtas, and Lo Sasser is a possible asmachta, or Shal Avicha V'Yageidcha is a possible asmachta. And we'll discuss the difference in a second. But the Gemara, especially the Gemara in Brachos, is hard to know whether it's a proof one way or the other for either position, because the Gemara does invoke Lo Sasser in the context of Din and Rabbanan, just as it does here in our Gemara. But there, the Gemara says that Kol Milei D'Rabbanan Asmachuhu Alav D'Lo Sasser. So on the one hand, it invokes Lo Sasser, seems to be a proof for the Rambam. On the other hand, it does use a language, asmuchu, that it sounds like it's an asmachta, which means that it's davka not really the actual intent of the pasuk. Now, it happens to be, Rav Lau, the previous Rav Lau Senior, the previous chief rabbi, a couple of chief rabbis ago, so he has a tshuva and a sefer Yachal Yisrael about this, in Siman Yutes and Chelek Aleph, where he talks about the fact that, let's say, if you say Shalavicha V'Yageidcha is the mucker, so that's not a mitzvah. None of the Monei HaMitzvahs count this pasuk of Shalavicha V'Yageidcha as an actual chiyuv, as a mitzvah in the Tariq mitzvah sense. And he suggests that perhaps the Ramban means it in the context the way he apparently agrees with the Ritva. The Ritva in Rosh Hashanah has an understanding of Asmachta which is different than the way we conventionally understand it. If I'd ask you what Nasmachta is, so you'd probably say it's a Din D'Rabbanan, and Gemara quotes a pasuk because it makes it easier to connect, to remember. So the Gemara says, such and such is because of this pasuk, and you know it's not really a Din Min HaTorah, it's a Din D'Rabbanan that's associated with that pasuk. But the Ritva, in his commentary to Masechus Rosh Hashanah, has a statement where he says that's not what it means, and anyone who thinks that is a min, no offense to the Rambam and most other Rishonim who understand it that way, but he says it doesn't mean that. It means that the Kadosh Baruch Hu was kind of transmitting this message, that the Ratzon HaTorah is being revealed through this pasuk, that even though it wasn't officially, formally legislated until Chazal came and put it into play, but the Ratzon HaTorah is being conveyed that this is the case. So perhaps in that sense, one or the other, so you have these two psukim as an asmachta, and the Ramban understands that the difference is that losasa refers to things sheyesh lahem mikra min haTorah. If you have something like the other sugyas of Masechta Shabbos that we could learn about, where it's a din min haTorah, but Chazal expand upon it, so then maybe that's included or at least alluded to by losasa. In general, one of the problems of using losasa as a marker for dinim d'rabbanan is that if you look to the United States government, so we have different branches of government. So we have the judiciary and we have the legislative body, and they are two distinct bodies. They're not supposed to overlap. So the legislature makes the laws, and the judiciary is there to interpret the existing laws. And the judiciary is not supposed to say, I think the law should be such and such. They're supposed to say, I think the law is this, and even if I disagree, it's not my job to make the laws, that's the legislature's job. So here, the Torah and Parshas Shoftim, it seems like it's a judiciary role, that the authorities of that time can tell you what they think the Torah means, but they can't tell you, and we think it would be a good idea also if there was a din about such and such. That's not their job. It's not clear that there is such a position there that they could make up new laws, but the way the Rambam understands it to mean, that's a chiddush, because the context is a judiciary context. So here, the Ramban is saying that either way, he thinks it's an asmachta, but especially if you have to figure out how can they make new laws, so it's easier when it's an ikra min haTorah, when it's something that they're expanding on, it did in the Chumash, okay, so then maybe that comes from losasa. That's a part of the conversation you're already having, asking what the how to follow the din in the Torah. And they could say, and to keep yourself away from, keep Klal Yisrael away from violating this, we also impose such and such a rule. But when they come out of nowhere and they make something that's completely new, like Neir's Chanukah perhaps, so maybe that needs an even better asmachta, even just from the asmachta perspective, maybe that's not enough, we need to say something more, and therefore the pasuk of Sha'alavicha V'yageidcha is maybe a little bit more relevant, a little bit more applicable. The Chassam Sofer writes that he thinks that the truth is Chanukah really should be in the first category. The Chanukah is Ikar min haTorah, Chanukah and Purim are days that are really from the Chumash itself, and that this is based on a Gemara Maseches Megillah and Daf Yadal and Amud Aleph, which talks about Purim. The Gemara appears in Maseches Erechin as well. That the Gemara darshens a Kal V'Chomer that we say Halal on Pesach. So says the Gemara that Ma Mishibul Geula Mishira, that we say Halal when we celebrate the fact that we were taken from slavery to freedom. So Mimavus L'Chaim L'Kol Shekein, that if we're saved from war, we're saved from destruction, it would seem to be a Kal V'Chomer that we should say Halal. So the Chassam Sofer says that he thinks that really Chanukah, if you're going to label it, is something that could be connected to the Torah itself. This is a major tshuva. He has this idea in many, many places. You can probably list 6 or 7 places in the writings of the Chassam Sofer where he has this. We've darshaned about this in the past in connection to other things. It's a kind of a meta theme in Chanukah, and we'll presumably return to it, but this is a major yesod that he has, that Chanukah, essentially, our behavior on Chanukah, as much as everything, is drabanan in the sense of chronology and the human involvement, but there is a strong daraisa current, there is a strong daraisa factor obligating it, which can be tied to this kind of Kal V'Chomer. So the Chassam Sofer understands that really Chanukah, he thinks, really could be considered Ikar min haTorah. He doesn't see whether it's really right to distinguish on those lines. But he thinks that maybe the question should be, as earlier sources say as well, the Kiryas Sefer, that maybe the question is it appropriate for mitzvah saseh versus lo saseh? That maybe lo saseh is a lot, is there to say that the Isurim Drabbanan, the Xeris Drabbanan, are included or at least referenced to by that pasuk. While the idea of a mitzvah saseh, of a takana, that's where it comes from, shalavicha v'yagedcha. The Sefer Vayechi Yosef, quoted a number of later svarim, he suggests that maybe you could say the shaila's like this, and this is very relevant to considering some of our nearest Hanukkah questions, that maybe, like the Chacham Sofer's position, that's basically correct. That Hanukkah as a whole, the expression of Halal the Hodah on Hanukkah, does have an Ikar Min HaTorah, does essentially emerge from this Kal V'Chomer of Halal on Pesach. And the question is, not just about Hanukkah as a whole, but specifically Neiros Hanukkah, which we're focused on now. So is Neiros Hanukkah basically an extension of the Halal the Hodah? This is one other expression of Halal that Chazal instituted. So it's in the spirit of Halal. Or is it a separate takana? They said, okay, you should do a couple things on Hanukkah. You should say Halal every day. And presuming Nisa, you should light Hanukkah candles. That's a different mitzvah. So the recitation of Halal on Hanukkah, that's part of a Kal V'Chomer from Pesach. But the lighting of Hanukkah candles, that's a different din, and that maybe needs a different pasuk. That's Shalavicha V'Yagedcha. So there's a lot to discuss about how exactly Dinim D'Rabbanan manifest themselves. And it's a major sugi here in the second parak of Shabbos. We'll probably have a little more to say about it, but it's very much connected to this morning's parasha of Shalavicha V'Yagedcha. And it could possibly be a question at the very root of the nature of the Takana of Neres Hanukkah. How should we view it? Should we view it as essentially a daraisa? And even if Hanukkah is to be viewed as a daraisa, so then also all of Hanukkah, or is Neiros Hanukkah and Halal in the same breath, or are these two separate takanas? These are very relevant questions. The issue is also important because, in general, it's a big question. We'll get more into this probably at a later time, but the question of Baal Tosef, and how is it that the rabbis have the ability to add on things? It's a big question that we have somewhat of a tension between the Isser of Baal Tosef and the notion of Chazal making new mitzvot. They do seem to be at odds with each other, and there are many, many different approaches, but part of it is related to this question that sometimes the search for an Ikar Min HaTorah, the assumption that there has to be some type of a link, is relevant to this issue. Rav Lau discusses in his tshuva the whole question of Ikar Min HaTorah, the assumption that Dinim D'Rabbanan are more machmir if they're somehow connected to the Chumash as opposed to if they're disconnected, is easier to understand based on the Ramban than it is in the Rambam. According to the Rambam, really all the D'Rabbanan should basically be on the same level. There's a legislative authority given to Chazal, and they should all basically be the same. According to the Ramban, that there's some type of an asmachti here, which is davka rooted more, let's say, in the losasei of losaser, if it's got a dikra min haTorah, as opposed to the vague asay, which isn't counted in the minyan mitzvahs of shalavicha v'yagecha, so that may taka lead to a difference in chumrah between that which is connected to the Torah and that which isn't, and it's easier to understand the attitude in poskim of ikar min haTorah being a little different than not ikar min haTorah, based on the Ramban's understanding than it is based on the Rambam's understanding. Just to mention also that homiletically, when we talk about v'yagedcha, so literally means they should tell you, seems pretty straightforward, but we see it has already a scope of meanings because it could be a tzivoy of some sort. So homiletically, you find the Mefarshim also find different meanings in v'yagedcha that some, if you look in the Sefer Paris Yosef HaChadash, quotes, I think, from the Shin of a Rebbe, that it's from Milashin Aguda, meaning to be bound up, that that which connects us from one generation to the next, that which connects us as Jewish people, is the fact that we look to the older generations and we ask them to tell us what happens. So this is not just interesting. This is not just something that keeps us occupied, but this is what creates a unity among the Jewish people. This is what creates this bond. And that's particularly relevant in the context of Parshas Hazinu, which is, we'll comment more in a second. All of these psukim are talking about the whole history of the Jewish people, that God found us in the desert, and He took care of us, and we behaved, we misbehaved, we went up, we went down, all of this picture. So we are connected through this long spectrum of history, as we said a minute ago. So the Agedcha also perhaps has this lashon of Aguda. Others suggest, in a little bit of a less cheerful note, that maybe it has a lashon of Dvarim Kashim Kigidin, that it means also the father sometimes has to be able to speak in a tough way. He has to be able to give musr when necessary. If he feels he feels that the children are going off the path, so he has to be able to act decisively and to speak strongly in order to restore them. So that's the language of Viagedcha. So then to go look at Pasuk Yud here. So the Pasuk says, Im so'ehu b'eres midbar v'sohu v'sohu yalel yasimon yasov v'venu yavonenehu yisrenu kishoneno. So here Kadosh Baruch was talking about the Jews in the singular as if he was a person. He was wandering around the desert, and God directed this person, the Jewish people, and gave him Bina, there's that word again, Yivonenehu, and he instructed him, etc., etc. So if you look at Rashi on this Pasuk, so Rashi talks about, again, this whole history that the Jews are wandering around in the desert, and they accepted the Torah, unlike Esav and Yishmael. We know the famous Chazal that the non-Jews, the nations of the world, were not willing to accept the Torah, and the Jews did. And this language of being brought around, so then Rashi invokes Kafu Aleim Har Kigigis, the fact that the Gemara says in the Masechta Shabbos later on in Daf Peches that the Kadosh Baruch Hu had to force the Jewish people to accept the Torah, held the mountain up on top of them, and said, "If you accept the Torah, you're good. In Lav Sham Teik Vuraschem. If not, I'm going to drop the mountain on you." So it's a little bit hard because, in general, that's a kasha. Tosfos over there in Masechta Shabbos asks that the whole idea of Kafu Aleim Har Kigigis is contradictory to our great source of pride, the Sukkim and Chumash, and Mishpatim and Yisrael. We say Nasa v'Nishma. We're so proud that we jumped in, that we're willing to accept the Torah without even knowing what the details were. And then the Gemara tells us really the opposite, that we weren't willing to accept the Torah at all, and we had to have the mountain held over our heads. So that's itself a contradiction. But here, if you look at Rashi interpreting this pasuk, the whole contradiction is in one pasuk. Everything is here in one scope. Oh, and you're so wonderful, you received the Torah like no one else was willing to do, and I had to hold a gun over your head and force you to do it. So it's a very hard flow. What exactly is going on there? So really, you have to just consider the various range of interpretations to the essential steer in the Gemara. If you look in the Sefer Chavetzalos Sasharon and Hazinu, he discusses it in light of that, but really, all of this issue is the issue that Tosfos is talking about in Shabbos, about how do we deal with the contradiction b'chlal between Kafu Aleim Har Kigigis and Nasa V'Nishma, which is kind of represented in micro in this one pasuk. So a couple of the approaches that you have to that steer, first of all, there's the Medrash Tanchuma, which is also very relevant to what we were talking about a minute ago, that suggests the Tanchuma in Parshas Noach, that when we said Nasa V'Nishma, that was about the Torah Shebichzav, the written Torah that we were willing to accept. But the Torah Shebapeh, with all the details and all the chumras and all the marmakomos, and so much that we have to do with the Torah Shebapeh, it's so much bigger and more complicated and more demanding than the Torah Shebichzav. So we were not willing to accept that. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, sorry, it's a package deal. You have to have it all at once, otherwise nothing doing. So that emphasizes the complex nature of the relationship, that we were willing to accept the Torah, that's what got us into the door in the first place, but we also had to understand that that came together with the necessary component of the Torah Sheba'al Peh. The Tosfos who raises the question answers differently. Tosfos says that really the Kafu Aleim Har Kigigis was about later, that we shouldn't run away after we saw all the challenges. So we said Nasa V'Nishma, and then God said, okay, now you can't run away from this. So if that's that could help for the stira, but it's not so good for this pasuk, because it doesn't really explain how the pasuk is presenting this as part of Kabbalah Satorah. That really only answers Tosis's question locally, that's the contradiction between his Gemara that he's commenting on and Nasa V'Nishma in general. Another question about that?
So V'Venu is supposed to be like a positive?
That's what we're trying to figure out, because it sounds like it's a negative, right? So, but here, the pasuk, the whole thrust of the pasuk is, oh, you were wandering in the desert, and you were faithful to God, and He accepted the Torah, and He had to hold the gun to your head.
So right. How does so even according to the answers between the Nasa and the Nishma and the Kafu Aleim Har Kigigis, they're still coming out to be positive?
Well, the Tosfos is harder to think, especially even with that being positive. It's also that it's not part of really Kabbalah Satorah, it's kind of the aftermath of Kabbalah Satorah. But I think the idea is that if you say, for example, the Tanchuma's interpretation, a very prominent interpretation. It comes up in a lot of contexts. So very prominently.
Didn't want to accept Torah Shabbat.
Right, but that we didn't really understand what Torah Shabbat Peh was. So that this is a part of this complex relationship, which the whole parsha is talking about, that we had ups and downs, that we were there, but we weren't totally there, and God kept with us the whole time. So I think the interpretations of this specific stira are very much of a piece with the whole parsha, with the whole thing. If you take all of them and plug them into the psukim, the taka works very well. Now, this is a whole separate theme, but Hanukkah's partner at Purim, so when you get to Purim, so ultimately we do accept it. And I think there's a lot to darshan about that, to talk about that Purim time. But when the Gemara says, the same Gemara over there in Shabbos, the Gemara says, Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim, that Purim time we did accept, Kimu masha kiblu kvar, that ultimately we came to accept what we didn't accept then. And if you use the Tanchuma's interpretation, it means that Torah Shabbat Peh we eventually came around to. So again, in the long picture of history, this is all one theme. This is what's coming back and forth in this parsha again and again, that there's a complex up and down relationship between us and the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that we have to see history all in one picture. So then maybe that's what this pasuk essentially is going at. The Maharal of Prague has two different interpretations about this, both very homiletic in nature, but are also a part of understanding what's going on a little bit. One is that he understands it's a very non-literal reading. It's part of the Maharal's approach, that he kind of innovated reading a lot of the Agadotis in a less literal way. So he understood the idea of being forced to accept the Torah, not so much like it's really a gun to our head in that sense, but that it was made very clear to us that our whole future depends on accepting the Torah, that it became so obvious that it was as if there's no Bechira Chafshis, basically, essentially, at that point, because it was made blatantly obvious that there was no hope if there wasn't going to be an acceptance of the whole Torah. But on the other hand, and this is an extremely homiletic point, so this is basically, it has the effect that to our benefit, that now it's as if we accept the Torah Ba'ones, as opposed to Baratzon. So why is that good? Because we know that in the Torah of a Ma'anes is that he can never divorce the subject of the Ones. So that's the Kadosh Baruch Hu saying, well, you're willing to accept the Torah Baratzon, I don't care, I'm still going to impose it Ba'ones, so that it's binding forever. No matter what you do, I can never drop you, I can never megarish you. That's the message and the imagery of this whole episode. And again, putting it in the context of this long picture of history that Hazina represents, that's very much a theme as well. So just to look briefly, just for a few minutes, at the Shlishi, the Yotzei, the Shlishi points, to see the pasuk here talks about the Chamas Bakar, just to mention very quickly. So it's an interesting question, how would you translate that phrase? So literally that means butter, right? Chamas Bakar v'chalev tzon. So chema is butter, and milk, chalev is milk, usually. But if you look at the way Rashi sounds and the way the Ibn Ezra comments, that this does not mean literally butter and milk. It's saying the products of these animals, which means essentially flesh. So there's two advantages. One, the general natia towards the flesh of food. But I just wanted to mention this in the context of the discussion that we had last week, that the Netziv just makes a very quick comment that he says it's more likely, like these Rishonim, like Rashi and the Ibn Ezra, who understand this to mean fleshiks rather than milchiks, because the Gemara, which tries to figure out the subject we talked about last week, why it is that milk is kosher, because you could have had a shayla, yotzim, this, and the like, so the Gemara doesn't reference this pasuk, which talks about milk and butter. So the reason the Gemara doesn't quote this pasuk, says that it says, is because these Rishonim are right, that it's not really talking about milk and butter, it's a way of referencing the products of these animals actually meaning fleshiks. Hi.
Maybe still like that, doesn't the Midrash say that Eretz Vos, Chalav Vash, is really talking about from Shevaminim?
So you're saying once you want to take it homiletic, you can knock out that pasuk also.
Right.
That's an interesting point, but because you have to figure out how far to go with that. But that's his suggestion, is that on no level does this mean milk and butter. It's a way of saying the produce. Okay, could be. So we'll just talk quickly about the last pasuk here. Sor Yoladecha Teshi. So you are neglectful. Teshi, you basically abandon the rock of your childhood, the rock that gave birth to you, and the God who forms you, so you are willing to forget him. So there is a fascinating mashal about this, and again, our friend Rabbi Simon, I think we ended on quoting him last week, we'll end on quoting him again today, has an essay about this in the Sefer Mevarach. It's also relevant when we're talking about the Imre Baruch, if I remember correctly, in the Hakdama to the Sefer. So he talks about the idea that Amira is a soft type of speech as opposed to Haggadah, which is a harder type of speech. So we talked about that a few minutes ago, about Shalavicha V'yageicha sometimes being a tough kind of speech. So to hear, perhaps that's the contrast. But in any event, so he notes there, many Sfarim quote this, that this idea of the Pasuk telling us about how you abandoned your father God and you forgot him. So the Dibner Magid has a fascinating mashal here. And the Dibner Magid had many, many mashalim, hence his reputation, say for Mishle Yaakov, all of his mashalim and many of his mashalim, so he was best known for this. But this is one of the mashalim. I think he had three such mashalim, where the famously hard-to-please Kutzker Rebbe said, oh, he got the MS with this one. This is really what it's all about. So I think there were three mashalim about which the Kutzker Rebbe said that he praised the Livne Magid's mashalim, and this was one of them. So what was the mashal he says here? He says, let's say you have a situation where Reuven borrows money from Shimon, and he's overdue, he has to pay back Shimon, but he doesn't have the money. So he goes to Levi, and he says, Levi, help me out, what should I do? So Levi says, I'll give you advice. What you should do is, when Shimon comes to ask you for the money to pay back, start ranting and raving and screaming and throwing stuff, and act crazy. He'll think you're nuts, and he'll run away, and you'll buy some time. He'll be able to pay back later. This mashal, by the way, does not comment on the halachic appropriateness of the particular strategy. It's just a story. No editorial, does not reflect editorial policy. It's just a mashal. So in any event, so that's just like yesterday we talked about stealing chauffeurs. Again, you know, that shouldn't be taken in the wrong context. But in any event, so this is the advice that Levi gives to Reuven. He says, rant and rave and jump up and down and throw things, and your creditors will run away, and you'll be able to buy some time to pay them back later. So Reuven says, that's a great idea. Okay, thank you so much, I'll do that. He does it, it works. Shalom al Yisrael. So then a few weeks later, so Reuven needs some more money, so he knows he can't go back to Shimon because he's kind of established a reputation with him. So he goes to Levi to borrow some money. So he borrows money from Levi for a month, and then a month later, Levi comes back and says, I'd like my money back. So Reuven starts throwing things and ranting and raving and screaming at him. So Levi says, you can't do that to me. I taught you that trick. I told you that that's what you should do to hide from your creditors. I know what that's about. I gave you that tool in order to hide from other people. You're using it on me. That's what you're going to do. That's terrible. So the Magid said, Pasuk is getting at it. So what does that mean? So what it seems to mean is that here our Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us a gift of shikcha. He gave us this ability to forget things, which is for our benefit. And we use it against him, so to speak. We use it to forget God. That God gave us a gift of shikcha, and we use it to forget him. It's like the same guy who uses this tool that Shimon gave him to hide, Levi gave him to hide from Shimon, he uses it to hide from Levi. So you have to understand what that language of shikcha as a gift means. Now here, we study for midterms and finals, we have a very hard time relating to shikcha as anything positive. But the truth is, it is something very positive. I remember when I was a little kid, I asked my father, I said, wouldn't it be great if somebody could invent a machine that you could push a button and you could forget whatever you want? So my father was very impressed at that thought. He thought, wow, that's such a tremendous insight into human nature, into what people really need. So many people go through traumatic experiences. If they would be able to forget things that they wanted to forget, it would be a tremendous gift. That's why he was so surprised that this young son was able to think of this. So I then continued to say, it would be a great invention because then you could read mystery novels twice. So he was significantly less impressed. That wasn't what he thought. But it illustrates this point that there is a loftiness. Sometimes there are different possible benefits to forgetting things, that we are focused, especially in a yeshiva context and an academic context, in trying to remember as much as possible. But there is an advantage to forgetting. So the advantage is less that you can reread mystery novels, but more significant things that really, most likely, truth is traumatic experience is a big part of it, but we would not make any decisions if we remembered every bad thing. If we had every memory in front of us all the time, we would not be able to move in life. We would not be able to function. So, you know, guys your age maybe are dating, getting married. So nobody would ever go on another date if they remembered all the bad dates they had in the past. Nobody would ever make any business decision if they had in mind everything that's happened in the past. The Kadosh Baruch Hu allows us to take the steps we need to be able to progress in life, because everything that has scared us in the past and everything that has traumatized us in a small T sense or in a big T sense, whatever it is, anything that has hurt us in the past, we're able to put it aside and we're able to move forward. That's really a tremendous gift. Otherwise, we wouldn't move forward. So this shikha Kadosh Baruch Hu has given us is something that's really very beneficial for us. Parenthetically, there's a much more homiletic, let's say, interpretation, a little bit less psychologically oriented, but in the Sefer Leiv Simcha, he has this suggestion, and it's very much consistent with something Rav Shechter writes in Nefesh HaRav, that Rav Shechter talks about there in Nefesh HaRav, that the whole idea that we have, we talk about this for Shalom Zachers, the whole idea that we have that the Torah is taught to us in the womb, and then when we're born, we forget it all. And so that's somehow one of the explanations as to why we have a Shalom Zachar. So the question comes up, so what exactly is the point of that? You know, we'll have enough opportunities to forget things as we go to yeshiva later on in life. We don't need to have that before we're born. What exactly is the point of learning the whole Torah and then forgetting it? So Rav Soloveitchik expounded upon this. I think in Nefesh HaRav, Rav Shechter has a whole interest about this point, that the idea is that, first of all, we want to learn the Torah through our effort, through our yigiyah of Yamala. So we don't want it all to be implanted into a chip into our minds before we're born. That's not really the actual kinyan of Torah that we're looking for. Okay, so then fine, we have the benefit of being able to toil for it. But so then what was the point of learning it in the first place? The idea is that the love for Torah that we have is because of that, that it was all placed into our consciousness and then we forgot it. So we're essentially like we're searching for a lost love. We feel that we had this once and we need to regain it. So this whole drive that we have towards Torah comes from this history. So it's to our benefit that we forgot it, because now we can acquire it through our actual Yigi of Yamala. But the process initially was there to give us this drive. So in that sense also, okay, then maybe shikha has a benefit. So Kadosh Baruch was saying, I gave you shikha for a positive purpose, whether it's so that we can learn Torah on our own, whether it's so that we can put aside all our bad memories and be able to function in life. The point is, I gave it to you for good things, and look what you're doing, you're using it to forget me, you're using it to forget God. That's a terrible betrayal. So in that sense, that's what Rabbi Simon discusses over there in the Imrei Baruch, that the Yom Tovim are really the antidote to that, that the whole idea of the Yontif, and specifically the Yom Tovim we're about to observe, are about focus, about giving attention where we don't always put it. And the whole idea, really every theme of every Yontif, whether it's Chanukah or Sukkot, a good way to talk about everything in one breath, whether it's any specific calendar date, really all the themes of Rosh Hashanah, all the themes of Chanukah, all the themes of Tisha B'Av even, are really relevant 365, 356 days a year. They're relevant all the time. But we need to have Yom Tovim to direct our attention at certain intervals so that it'll be a forefront of our consciousness. So really this is a way of keeping us focused on something, of helping us remember that which we otherwise forget. So here the Torah is criticizing us for forgetting God. So the antidote to that is the Yom Tovim, which redirects our attention. We have the shofar blowing in order to wake us up, to keep us from this point of distraction and to focus us. And Sukkot, especially Sukkot, is a time which is very much focused on attention. And that's why, for example, we find certain psulim of a sukkah, that if a sukkah is too high, so the Gemara in the first half of sukkah says pasul, three reasons in the Gemara why it's pasul. One of the reasons is to lo shalta be'ena, that no one's going to look. You're not going to pay attention if something is too high. And again, for synergistic purposes, it's the same shear that we find for Neres Chanukah. Neres Chanukah, if they're that high, if they're more than 20 amos off the ground, it's the same soul that we find by Sukkah and we find by Chanukah. It's too high for people to look at. You're not going to pay attention. And the whole point is that we should redirect our attention. And that's specifically a din in Sukkah, that we know there is the famous Chumr of the Bach, that the Bach says why the Pasuk tells us that whether or not, we talked about yesterday a little bit, the question of mitzvah srichos kavana, so it's a question b'chol ha'torah kula, whether or not mitzvahs need intent. But he thinks separate from that, the mitzvah of sukkah requires focus that other mitzvahs don't have, that the Torah specifically says that you should sit in the sukkah with this mentality that God placed us in sukkahs in the Midbar. Of course, the machlok is what that means, but it means something. So the idea that we should remember that experience, so that's why we should sit in the sukkah. So the Bach writes a special chiddush by this mitzvah, distinct from all the other mitzvahs in the Torah, that here there is an imperative to have the focus and have the purpose in mind while you're doing it beyond the normal issue of Kavanah. So the Yom Tovim are a time for special attention, special focus, and it should be our bracha, and it should be our goal, especially again when we start with the shofar, which the whole imagery of the alarm clock is so prominent that we should be able to focus and direct our attention to what's really important in life. And that's really what Rosh Hashanah is about, that we take out at least one day a year at the very beginning when we set our priorities and we set our agenda for the year. So even if over the course of the year we forget things, we get distracted, we get caught up in other things, but at least for this one day a year when we set the theme for everything that's about to come, we should be able to direct our attention to what's important and make sure that we don't forget that, those things, and make sure that we have a focus that will give us a proper year of bracha and mazel and aliyah and hatzlacha as the year progresses. On that note, I will see you all next year. I wish you shana tova, should be only good things.